Hello, and welcome to It's All About Choices. This is the show where my guests and I discuss our lives and our careers framed through the choices that we've made, some good and some bad. My name is David Barrow, and for those of you that don't know me, I've been working in IT service-related roles for 29 years. 2023 will mark my 30th year in the workplace. It's a career that started upon leaving school with very few qualifications and a passing interest in information technology. The truth is, I didn't set out to do this job or any of my first few jobs. But those 30 years have really flown by, and it's through a mixture of luck, judgment, some amazing mentors and managers, and not to mention a myriad of choices that I find myself where I am today. During this series, my guests and I will reflect upon the choices that we have made that have led us up to today, as well as our future choices. And we do this not just for ourselves, but we do it to help others who are on their own career journey, who may face similar choices to those we've faced across our many career paths. Each episode of It's All About Choices will begin with a period on my own journey, and my guests will be people that I first met at that time. My guest today is Liz Lai. Liz and I first met back in 2010. Back then, I had just returned from a much needed sabbatical and had a great opportunity to join Liz and her team. I was refreshed and ready to go. And working with Liz provided me with a great opportunity to step away from the 24/7, always on lifestyle of managing services that I'd been used to for my whole career, but provided me with a whole new challenge of managing lots of people. Liz may or may not know it, but her guidance, patience, and calm way of working would teach me a great deal, making Liz one of the group of great female leaders who've really inspired me throughout my career. So Liz and I will discuss the choices that led to us working together, how Liz changed my approach, and Liz's future choices in retirement. If you're watching live via YouTube or LinkedIn, please feel free to ask questions or simply stop by to say hello. After all, it's all about choices. Hey Liz, how are you doing? Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you, David. Oh, it's a lovely introduction. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's the truth though. So we can dive into that because I think as I said, we met around 2010. I mean, we'd seen each other around on site, I recall.
But yeah.
We kind of met more formally in 2010. We were working in Worthing. For those of you that don't know the UK, that's by the coast on the south. Always sunny.
It's sunny today.
I live 40 miles north and it's raining. That's the difference, you see. But the opportunity to work with you came like at a real opportune moment for me. I'd just come back from sabbatical and really up until that point, my career had been always on the phone, 24/7. And it's frankly the reason why I needed a sabbatical. I was completely
draining. Yeah.
Incredibly draining, and you gave me a great opportunity. But I'd like to discuss first how your career panned out leading up to that day, because you know, you were leading a large team, leading a huge government deal, and I don't think I probably ever asked you that question. Good to know now.
Well, I mean, by the time we met in 2010, I had a 30-year working career. Not all of it in IT. I left school with A-levels in 1980, not really knowing what I wanted to do. I ended up in an office doing accounts work, which actually I really enjoyed. I kind of liked the precision of it and working in a big team as well. So I kind of got used to that office environment. It was a big insurance company in Bristol, which is where I was born. And then at some point, there was a big merger and the company changed and they offered relocation for the accounts people. And that's how I ended up in Worthing. But I absolutely hated the new job that I'd been given. It was dull. I was bored. It wasn't the equivalent of what I'd been doing previously. And essentially after 2 or 3 months, I left. I just wrote round to various employers in the Worthing area saying, this is what I've been doing. Inland Revenue at that point was a very big employer in Worthing. And they wrote back to me and said, well, we haven't got anything in accounts, but we are doing a recruitment for trainee computer programmers. Would you like to take the aptitude test? And so, yeah, I just, let's go for that. Let's see how that pans out. So that was actually the start. I don't think IT had ever been on my radar, to be quite honest. At school, there weren't any computers in our school. You know, it was very much, it was a brand new industry. And I think that was one of the things that I could see that it was growing. I actually took quite a pay cut in order to do that training course. It was about a third less salary in order to start trainee computer programming. And so that was a very new, it was a new industry that the revenue actually at that time were recruiting all over the place. There was a training course going on when I started. There was another training course with me, another one, you know, a few weeks later. So there was a big influx of people because in that mid 80s period, IT was really growing and really taking off. So it was an interesting time, I think, and a little bit of a gamble to try something completely new. But ultimately, it worked out really well for me. I took to it quite well, I think. I enjoyed the programming side, and you just sort of work your way up through the ranks. You start off as a junior programmer, then maybe you get a bit more of an analysis type and do an analysis role. And then you might have a junior programmer working for you. So you just work your way up kind of slowly. And I suppose that I enjoyed that work, and I started doing work on databases, for example. And that was when I was working on one of the first databases that was used there at that time. So I was actually I always thought I'd actually stay really technical. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that technical side of things, and I thought that's where I would stay. But I think at that point, the career path for somebody who wanted to be technical wasn't really very well defined. I think generally people have this view of you start technical and then you build up and then you become a manager. And you lose perhaps some of the people who are actually really good technical. I think it's different now, but at that stage, that was the way things went. And I was kind of happy in my fairly senior technical analyst type role. Then I had children. And I became part-time. So I went down to 3 days a week with the children. Still fairly happy in my technical role. And then inevitably, there is a reorganization within your area. And it created 3 roles, all identical. And it was a role that involved talking to the customer. It involved having a little team and directing the work. And I thought, this role is absolutely perfect for me. I loved talking to the customer. I loved finding out what they were up to and how I could help them. And I came back from leave to find 2 of the 3 roles had been allocated. And I was like, why didn't anyone talk to me? I was kind of like, I'd be perfect for this. Why hasn't anyone spoken to me?
Yeah.
And I remember going into my manager at the time and sort of being a bit, what's going on? And they said, well, yes, we did think you would be perfect for the role, but you're on 3 days a week and we didn't think that you'd be able to manage the whole role on 3 days a week. So I said, what if I went to 4 days a week? And that's how I got the role. And so that is how I started that bit of learning with the customer and having that team, and sort of a similar to the role that you ended up doing for me.
Yeah.
That, you know, where you get that variety. And I loved that role. I really enjoyed it. It was different. You got to do a little bit of everything. You had client management. So you had the team management. You had some development stuff. You were project managing, albeit small enhancements. So you got to a flavour of all sorts of things. And that really appealed to me, because you don't want to be bored. And that variety really, really did appeal. So I think that's how it started. And then very gradually, I became involved in some of the more contractual side of things. So the management of the contract. And occasionally I present as well, but only as kind of like the stand-in. And then eventually, I think around about 2007, again, there was another reorganization. And I was kind of, I was almost last man standing. As a, okay, so you kind of got the top job of looking after the whole team. And yeah, that's kind of where I, by accident, kind of, because I have to admit, I wasn't entirely sure that was correct. You know, okay, if nobody else does it, then okay, would I want somebody else coming in above me to do it? It was a little bit daunting, I have to admit. So that's really how I ended up. But I think I had quite a good male mentor who was saying, yeah, we believe in you. We think you can do it. So that's where how I ended up, and us meeting in 2010.
And there's so many things around what you're saying that make sense in terms of what other guests have said, but also some of the things that I found when I started working with you. So I'll try and go from the beginning. Firstly, what everybody seems to say, myself included, is none of us really chose IT, it chose us. I should coin that phrase, but it's chose us, IT chose us. I should have thought about that one before. But yeah, it's kind of a career path that we all seem to have ended up in. And then the path itself within IT has been just one of a myriad of different types of choice. And I just think, like, from your perspective, you've taken a role, you've moved home, so you've relocated, and then you're out of work and you're in your career. Just how brave that is in terms of the choices that you made there. But then thinking about the work we did, my career, as I said at the beginning, up to that point, had been very always on, 24/7, but also incredibly reactive. So my job was to solve things that were going wrong.
Whereas
working with you was and you've summed it up perfectly in saying it was that mixture of client conversation, gathering requirements, a bit of project management, people leadership, communication especially. And it was really the moment for me in my career where I realised it didn't have to be always responding, but I also realized that those I should emphasize, those relationships that you'd nurtured and other members of the team had nurtured, which I was then able to come and pick up elements of, were such that you could stop things from going wrong in the first place because you had a good relationship with the customer.
Absolutely.
And I never know how much we can share about the people we were working with, but you've mentioned the revenue, and we were working with people that have real fundamental input into the UK's economic policy and how we develop it in terms of budget and fiscal responsibility. But it was a whole new world for me. And what I can see now is just how you, from everything you said, the accountancy bit, I can completely see that now from the perspective of the finances. And now I know why they were so good. And I've never thought to ask the question before. Again, that's another thing you taught me, is how to do finances, how to forecast. I remember not getting that at first. So you mentioned you had that male mentor, and I think it's, you know, obviously, as you say, you were working in the 80s, 90s and noughties, and things have moved on even throughout that period and now. Did you ever feel, because obviously I don't want to be negative, but was there any negativity attached to you being a female working in technology? Did you find opportunities that weren't always presented?
I thought long and hard about this, to be quite honest, and I can't think of anything where I felt that I was being disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, going back to the 80s, I went for interviews where I was asked, do you have a boyfriend? Are you planning on starting a family soon? You know, those types of questions, which are just totally ridiculous. And I think as well, at the time that I started programming, there are actually quite a lot of women at the same time. Okay, it wasn't 50-50, but it was probably 40-60, something like that. There were a lot of women coming in, particularly women who were already, for example, in the revenue, who took the aptitude test because that was a promotion path for them and got into IT that way. So actually, I have a lot of female contemporaries who were in the IT industry. Yes, there were sexist remarks, particularly in the 80s and 90s. But I don't really recall anything where I felt that I was being disadvantaged because I was a woman. You could say that the example of not talking to me about that role that I knew was perfect for me when I was 3 days a week. But I don't think it was thought in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, the conversation might have been, it might have been easier to have had the conversation first and then sort of talked about it. But I don't think I've ever had anything personally where I felt that I have been disadvantaged. And that, you know, the fact that I did have a relatively successful career, I think probably kind of demonstrates that. And I think you build that by building respect. I think I'm lucky that I didn't come across too many misogynists in my career. But I think if anything held me back, I think it was myself initially. So I certainly, when I was presented with the opportunity to run the account, I did not think that I kind of felt had that imposter syndrome. You know, really, are you sure that I can do this, that I can make these decisions? I think actually I think if I look back at that job, I was actually looking after not only the account but also sort of the business side of it and the growth of the analytics side of things. And that was too much to do, and that role got split, which was the right thing to do. But other than that, I can't really think of anything other than myself that held me back. I do think that maybe I should have tried different areas. I don't know. But who knows? I don't think you can end up with too many regrets, because I actually had an enjoyable IT career. I think, you know, people often advise me, you know, you talk about career development and, you know, looking after people. People often advise me, oh, go and do something else, you know, get spread your wings, go and do something else. But I never really found the right opportunity that excited me enough. There were some opportunities, but I don't know. Did I look for stumbling blocks? Possibly. But at the end of the day, I had a really enjoyable career, met a lot of amazing people, and I'm quite happy with it.
That's great. Yeah, and I think there's a couple of points that again come in. There's one that comes in from other guests and one we could explore. I think the one that comes in from other guests is the imposter syndrome. In my earlier episodes of this podcast, I was my kind of first female leader, Marion, who ran a help desk that I worked on. I looked up to Marion as though she was some kind of god, goddess. And the conversations that we had on this platform were nothing like the conversations. I wouldn't even dare speak to Marion hardly when I worked for her, because I held her in such high esteem. And she spoke to me about her own imposter syndrome running a service desk where I couldn't see a foot being put wrong. And it's, I was maybe at a slightly different level than you and I were working together, but again, you saying that is just a massive surprise to me, because again, that whole account was seamless in its execution and its delivery, which made me very comfortable coming in and being able to do my job. But now I see when I speak to people who I mentor, they have the same, they see me and say, how do you feel about these things? And I have imposter syndrome. Yes. And they have imposter syndrome, and it's like, how do we give one another confidence that we're not imposters? But I also think it's quite healthy as well, almost, to know that you're stretching
yourself. Absolutely. It was interesting, you know, when you sort of suggested doing this, it did make me kind of like think back and be quite honest with myself about, should I have done it that way? You know, is there anything that I can learn or pass on? Yeah.
And I think you said about having no regrets, and I think that's another thing worthy of discussion, because I'm similar. It's either what's the worst that could happen, or I'm just not going to regret it. If something goes wrong, nothing ever goes, certainly so far in my career, nothing's ever gone so wrong that it's irretrievable.
Nothing's
ever gone so wrong that I can't learn from it. And
that's
the other thing I try and share with the people that I speak to, is just go and have a go. But if you don't want to have a go, that's also okay. If you're comfortable where you are, and you want to continue to develop down that path, then don't let anybody tell you you shouldn't.
Yeah, I think that's sometimes something that people, you know, you want some satisfaction in the job that you do. And if you're perfectly happy doing what you're doing, you're enjoying it, you're being productive, then why do you want to move? You don't need to. If you're happy, just be thankful.
Absolutely. The grass isn't always greener.
That's true.
And it leads us on really to the next question, because as I've said at the beginning, you know, your ways of working and just the whole account was A, inspirational, and B, really informative in changing my approach to work.
Thank you.
You really helped me, and I'll speak on behalf of others, although they can speak for themselves, but the likes of Mike and Jason and Cody that I work with, that, you know, the way you introduced relationships and got us on with the client was stuff that I still lean on today, which is for those watching or listening, prior to starting the podcast, we always just have 5 minutes just to reacquaint ourselves. Liz and I haven't seen each other for a few years due to COVID. But you said, Liz, didn't you? I've got lots to say, but I'm a better listener than I am a speaker. And I think that's the thing that I lean on today is I probably in the past, maybe still some would say, say more than I need to, listen less than they'd like me to. So I try and get that balance. And you really helped me achieve that balance between this is worth saying and this is worth listening to. But, you know, I think a few of us have gone off and done various different things. But were you conscious of how your approach was kind of leading the team at the time? And do you think there was any choices that you made that kind of led you to work in that way? Or was it just Liz?
I think you always hope that you are leading by example. But I don't think I was necessarily conscious of it as such. I mean, yes, I think I am, but, you know, but by the time you met me, don't forget, I'd had 10 years experience of doing that role. I'd had 20 plus years in IT. So there was a certain familiarity, and I suppose it had just developed over time. But yes, I do think I'm a better listener than talker. And I think you also have to be interested. You have to, you know, you really have to actively listen. You know, that may be a little bit of a buzzword, but you need to be interested in what people are telling you to then ask a relevant question that shows that you've been listening to them and not just glossed over it. And I think there's an honesty as well. That is really, people quickly suss out if you are being false. There's that honesty. And that, do you know, there's one thing that I remember from a very early training course when we were first sort of chupied out of the revenue. And I've got no idea what this actual course was about. It must have been some kind of team management. But they talked about a triangle. And they talked about at each point of that triangle, you had the company, you had the customer, and you had your team. And the idea was that they were all to be in balance. So you had an equilateral triangle. Everything was equal. Everything was balanced. And that's how I tried to behave. So I was thinking not only about the customer, the impact on my team, but also the impact on the company. Because after all, the company is there to make a profit and to pay your wages. You've got to keep those three elements all in balance in order to achieve and to succeed.
So true. And I think it was really apparent. I think the analogy is great as well in terms of having that equilateral triangle, so everything is in balance.
It goes back to my math stuff.
But I think that's probably the thing that I learned is when you're always responding to events, that's the priority and it's the only priority. And then you move on to the next priority.
Yeah, whereas, you're just fighting fires all the time.
Yeah, and now a lot of my consultancy that I do is using the experience and the bad things I did when fighting fires, and then the good things that I did afterwards, which started with working for yourself, to design things and design ways of working that could be behaviours that mean that if you have to fight that fire, you're going to arrive in the situation with a much better relationship with those that you're doing it with.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Thrown in. And you're also going to look at how you can stop that from happening again.
Yeah.
And how you can work together.
Preventative action. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. I remember as well when we parted ways, so to speak, when I was moving out of your team, to set the scene, obviously I've gone from that reactive to this much more proactive way of working with the customer, presenting all the things that you said and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then I was given an opportunity to go and do consulting for Capgemini. The thing I recall most about that is, and I mentioned it with Dave Laycock, who was my previous guest, is I was so nervous. so nervous about speaking to you about that, because you know, you've given me a great opportunity, and it's probably two or three years later. And there's just, you know, definitely a, because of the way we work together, a sense of loyalty and so on. But what I remember is I went on to do that, and a few others have gone on to do things. But what I remember really is coming to speak to you, you just encouraging me to go and do that thing.
Absolutely.
You know, it was.
Don't get me wrong, David. I was really, really sorry to see you go. But you know, if you have an opportunity that you think is right up your street, you've got to go for it.
Absolutely, and honestly, genuinely, I don't think I'd be doing what I'd be doing now if I hadn't have taken that opportunity yourself, which led to that. You know, that's the theme of this, you know, this podcast, about those choices. Sometimes that particular choice felt, because I was incredibly, it's a nice, good way of putting it, I was comfortably challenged working with the team and yourself, and we'd started building the apprentice scheme and the graduate scheme, and it was all going so I was comfortably challenged, but I remember thinking, if this opportunity passes me by, I may not get it again.
Absolutely.
That's the theme of this kind of podcast, really, is about those choices. Some are difficult and some are more difficult. And that's one of them. Well, but coming back to you, I know that, you know, we've talked a lot about what you did over the course of your career, and certainly when I kind of moved on from you, so I think it was give or take 40 people in the team. It was millions of pounds account. As I said, we built the apprentice and graduate scheme, and we've got some really great young people coming in. But from your perspective in your career, are there any elements that you're particularly proud of, or you think
I am proud of the fact that I was able to develop, not only me, but everybody in the team. I don't think there was one member of the team that had a bad relationship with a customer, where the customer didn't want to work with them or anything like that. We had some really, really great customer relations, some individual customer relationships, particularly with some of the maybe more senior developers. You know, the customer would actually ask to speak to them because they knew what they were talking about. So I'm really proud of that, the longevity and the breadth of that customer relationship. You know, the fact that we used to get an invitation to the customer's own conferences and their conventions and even present at those things, I think was a brilliant achievement, frankly. And I think I'm also very proud of them. We did a mainframe migration in a very, very short, period of time. And the customers were very anxious about it. And obviously a lot of people in the team were involved. There was a separate project lead, but nevertheless, to get that done in that short space of time, and for it all to be working perfectly on the Monday morning, I think I'm very proud of that achievement as well.
It should be, because the listeners may not know, but had that have gone wrong, it's the sort of thing that could have made quite big national headlines. So it's possibly.
There would have been some very unhappy customers, definitely.
it's a big thing. Yeah, it's fantastic. And we'll come to some of that. Well, you know, when I worked for you, as I said, we took on the graduate and the apprentice programs.
I enjoyed doing those things.
My first time doing it, and I still speak with a couple of the apprentices and grads from that time as well. Great to watch what they're doing. I'll be speaking to them in a future episode where possibly they'll be giving me a job, I hope. But also, I remember you encouraging all of us to do, you know, the volunteering. And I did my first piece of volunteering at the Prince's Trust when I worked for you. And that's something that really woke something up inside of me to give something back and to see if I could help. I think a lot of it comes to the point of the career that I've made has mainly been of my own making, but I've been really blessed with the people that have helped me make
it. Yeah, sure.
Yourself and Marion and other guests. But it woke something up inside of me that said I want to try and give people something back and help them with opportunities. And today I'm part of a Women in Technology mentoring program. And I use a lot of working with yourself and Marion and others. And I go back to those days of the Prince's Trust. But I'm just interested to know from your perspective, with the very long, successful career that you had, would you have any tips for women looking to step into or continue their career in technology?
Well, I'm not sure if these are female specific, to be quite honest, because I think they the sort of things that I'm probably going to say are across the board. I mean, I think the IT industry as a whole does have a very much of a it has a certain aura. I remember trying to encourage both my son and my daughter into IT, neither of which went that path. But I remember my daughter saying, "But I'm no good at maths." And I was like, what makes you think that you need maths in IT? You know, so I think there is a little bit of an image issue at source. You know, as much as I tried to convince her that maths was not involved, okay, I did some finances, but, you know, essentially it could be a very creative industry. But I think the things that I would say, first of all, be yourself. You know, that is a key thing. Be yourself, play to your strengths. And I would also say volunteer, get involved in things. As you say, mentorship programs or anything like that is always a good thing to get to do. Take advantage for any training that's offered to you, particularly soft skills. Those are the skills that, okay, they're great in the IT industry, but equally, if you decide that the IT industry isn't for you, you can take them elsewhere. And I mean, it might be a little bit different. It's 5 years since I've left. And obviously with COVID and training courses, maybe potentially online, but if there are workshops, those workshops to me are quite key, because then you're also making connections with people from other areas. You're building your network. And I think that is vitally important as well, to build a network, and perhaps it's even more so in this COVID age, to expand your network so that you're not totally isolated, that the only face you see, the only face you see is on Zoom or on a team call. I think you need to expand that. Just take advantage of the opportunities. You know, there are all sorts of things out there, and yeah, maybe find yourself a mentor. It might be a bit daunting to go and approach somebody, but by and large, I think most people would be quite flattered and happy to assist. And actually, if they're not happy to assist, then they're the wrong mentor for you.
Absolutely.
But I think that applies to women, you know, it applies to anybody in the workplace, I think.
Absolutely. You're so right. I mean, I love the fact that you said about the transferable skills. One of the things that I say to my mentees is, if you're coming in and you're new to IT, you will have skills that will be hugely beneficial to any role in IT, the soft skills, the transferable skills.
Of course,
it works the other way, like you say. If you get those soft skills, you can go and do a role. I mean, I see myself as working in the service industry, and I use technology to enable it. But those transferable skills are the key.
Definitely.
I absolutely love what you say about the kind of getting out there and workshops. I I run communities of practice now for organisations, which is themed all around that, bringing people out of situations and just having a conversation, focusing on a topic and seeing what you can do. You and I would have called it continuing improvement.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah.
And then, as you absolutely rightly say, those hints and tips apply no matter who you are.
I do think that there, as an industry, I mean, I think I certainly remember several apprenticeship programs, for example, where we might have had a recruitment. I don't recall very many females on those, you know, youngsters. I think it's quite a difficult, sometimes it seems to be a difficult sell for some reason, and I'm not quite sure why.
My opinion, for what it's worth, is because I think people are generally encouraged into computing and technology degrees through coding, and coding is seen as a male orientated.
Yes, it is.
Which is ironic because you came in as a developer. that's the irony. But then what I'm learning through working with young people on the subject is then they're not learning in this particular set of educational environments, that it's much more than coding. It is those soft skills, skills, people. And it's actually something I'm really passionate about, and I'm working with organisations to try and put right. That's
one of the things. Great, David. Thank you.
Thank you. But again, had I not done that work with the Prince's Trust, I don't know if I'd be doing the work I'm doing now. But that's really the point of the pod, is, you know, the choices that you made to get to where we met, and then the choices that you helped me make, all interlinked somehow. Result in us being sat here today, and the things that hopefully we've done for others. So I think it's really great how it hangs together.
Well, I'm proud of that as well then, David.
Thank you. I'm very proud of you. That's true. So we're coming up to the end now, but one of the other themes of the podcast, of the topic, is what choices await you next? You mentioned you've been retired for, I can't believe it's 5 years already.
I left 5 years ago. Right. Presented with the opportunity to leave 5 years ago, let's say. It was kind of a too good opportunity to miss, really. Mm-hmm. So since then, I have had the occasional little part-time job, just a few hours. But I have been volunteering just at a charity shop. So, in fact, I was there this lunchtime. and again, it's interesting that it's great fun. But again, it's a little team. You know, there's a nice little team there, and it's not necessarily that I go there for a chat and a nice cup of tea occasionally. So I've enjoyed the volunteering, and I think that will continue for quite some time. Little bit of travel, although obviously that's been a little curtailed over the last few years. But so, yes, travel is definitely still on the cards for next year. I've had family, obviously. My son's just got married. So October was a very busy month. And I've become a step grandma.
Wow.
Family, very, very important. And I think that's gonna be a little bit of volunteering. Travel and family is definitely the focus, and having fun and enjoying life.
I love that. It all sounds great, and that having fun bit is the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. Having fun, yes.
Absolutely love that. Well, Liz, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
It's been great to catch up, and I'm sorry I never asked you all those years ago how we ended up working together. weird, isn't it? Thank you so much for joining me. It's been really insightful, really informative, and a really good conversation. Thank you, and to those watching, thank you all for tuning in, and to those listening, thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time on the next episode of It's All About Choices. Goodbye.